With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Boob Talk. I'm your host, Cynthia Rogers. Thank you for joining me this evening. Tonight, we are going to be discussing cancer research. Some of you may not be aware, but May was National Cancer Research Month, and we are going to be talking about cancer research, also about breast cancer chemotherapy and hormone therapy drugs, as well as alternative medicine with tonight's special guest, Marilena Grattani. She is a clinical pharmacist, educator, and podcast host of The Legal Drug Dealer. Marilena, welcome to Boob Talk.
Hi, thank you. Happy to be here.
So glad you could be with us this evening. So as I was just mentioning in the show introduction, May was National Cancer Research Month. And during this pandemic that we're going through, also, you know, during the chaos that's been going on recently, people are still having to undergo cancer treatments, you know, take cancer drugs, go through chemotherapy. So even during, you know, this crazy chaotic time and pandemic, we still have to fight. So from your standpoint as a clinical pharmacist, how important is cancer research and also clinical trials?
Well, for us clinicians, people that work directly with patients, it is key because we have no idea what we need to do unless the studies coming from clinical research and clinical trials will tell us what to do. Actually, there is an institution that is called the National Comprehensive Cancer Network that is a international cancer network that every clinical study that is published is gathered there, and then they come up with guidelines that are specific for every single type of cancer. And then it would depend on what genes are involved, what other areas of the body are affected, if that is what it is, and how many glands, if that is the other part of it. So it basically tells you, okay, if you fill all this criteria, then this is a treatment that you need. And they're very specific, and it needs to be like that because cancer treatments are dangerous, not only for the patient, but also for people that make them and people that administer with it, which is nurses and pharmacists. So in this case, that is the key for us to know what to do with people that are safe, with people that are sick but that are not in that bad condition. So people that volunteer to do this research, not only researchers but also patients that are, you know, trying to prove the safety of these drugs on themselves, they're heroes because they're allowing us to know what to do in the future. So if you ask me how important they are, they're basic. Without them, we wouldn't be able to know what to do, where, or when.
Well, I just wanted our listeners to know that I volunteered to undergo a clinical trial when I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2016. They approached me, and I thought, you know, I want to be able to, you know, do my part. I'm not going to let this defeat me, so I agreed to be a part of a clinical trial study because I felt, you know, this is my opportunity to give back and help other women, you know, that may be going through the same thing. So, you know, I highly recommend to our listeners, if you can be involved in a clinical study, you know, please do so so that, you know, we can find a cure. So,
yeah. And thanks to people like you that are heroes are allowing us to know now. So thank you for that. I really, really appreciate
what you
did.
Oh, thank you so much. I don't really consider myself a hero. I just felt like there has to be a purpose for what I'm going through. So I just want to be able to give back and try to help in any way that I can. So you know, that was my motivation. And I, you know, like I said, I encourage any, you know, patients or survivors out there, if you can become part of a trial, to do so. So let me ask you this. So have there been any new treatments or drugs recently or in the last few years that have had an impact on breast cancer survivorship?
Not really big developments that you can tell that are life-saving, like the ones that we want to hear. We want a pill to or injection to be developed to be the miracle results for everybody that will solve every single type of cancer. That would be a dream, but there is not such a thing yet. And to be honest, I don't think it's going to get to that point. I think that we humans need to think the way that needs to focus on preventing it rather than fixing it, because it will be ideal if nobody has breast cancer ever again or any other type of cancer. So
right.
That's why I believe that this type of development on the other type of research that is to prevent and to discover genes that might be the reason why you might develop cancer in the future is the way to go. I say that from a very selfish standpoint, that I never had breast cancer and nobody in my family did too, so the chances that I will have it are very minimal. But for people like you, I know it might be more complicated because you have had a diagnosis. But the thing is that because you had it, if you have daughters, if you have sisters, if you have other members in your family, including male, they have the chance, the possibility to have it as well. So then these type of people are the ones that we recommend that go on research to find out if they have this type of gene. And if they do have the mutation for that gene, then they eventually will come up with, they will develop cancer. There is high incidence that are reported over 70% of people that might develop cancer by the age of 70 years old if they have one or the other gene. They're called the BRCA genes, or BRCA for breast cancer gene. And there are two types, and we all have them. That's what protects us from cancer. But some of them mutate, and that's when they become opposite. So they actually help the cancer cells to develop and cause cancer in us. So now the research is going towards that. So whenever you have somebody that is close to your family, that is related to you very close, like sisters, children, parents, or even your mother's siblings, that have had breast cancer, they is recommended that you go get these studies. And it's actually covered by insurance now because it is that important. So then you get to know if you have the mutation of one of those two types of genes, and then if it's necessary, if it's recommended, based on the incidence in your family. What I'm trying to say is that if all of them have had it and if several of them have died, if they develop it at an early age, the chances that you might have it are higher. And they actually have an algorithm that they put all your information in a computer and they tell you, well, the chances that you will develop it based on what you are right now might be 40% by this age or 50% by this age unless we take away your breast, which is what is happening. People are voluntarily getting mastectomies to develop cancer. So they just get the tissue that might develop that cancer out and they get replaced by prosthesis and then they go on with their lives. They rather do that drastic surgery instead of going through cancer, breast cancer. I think that those are other heroes as well, but they have their reasons, and so far now is working. Of course, we will not know the whole development of this new area of treating or preventing cancer until 20 years from now, which is when we will have enough data from these people that had these surgeries and the ones that choose not to have the surgery, and then when they develop it in the future. Because as it is right now, it's just an algorithm. It's not pure live. What happened is just science.
Now, let me share something interesting with you. My mother, she was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 60, and then she got it again in her other breast at 69. She just passed away in April, and she was 76. So, like I mentioned, I got breast cancer 2016. I took the BRCA test, no genes.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, where did this come from? And then I have a younger sister. She took the BRCA testing, no gene mutation. So the question is, how did we get it?
Well, I'm pretty sure that that's what happened. You had the gene mutation, but maybe the test that you got was not that sensitive, because it's like the virus that we're going through right now is a new thing, and we do not know that many details. In 20 years, we will know way more, and we will be able to have, okay, more conclusions that would say, okay, this type of test, we have shown that they don't have good results. And I don't know if you have heard it, but people are talking about the coronavirus test giving false negatives or false positives. That's because the tests are new and they're not the quality that are needed to be, because, you know, prices and insurance coverage, all that plays a role on this. So maybe that is what happens. Of course, I'm not a scientist. I'm not dedicated to investigation. My job as a clinical pharmacist is directly to treat patients, to dose correctly, and also to mix the drugs for them, so, and educate the patient as well. But I do not know details on that. But I do believe, and it's my humble opinion, that I think that the test might not be as good or as sensitive as you needed it to be when you tested. Of course, if we're talking about 10 years ago versus now, the tests are different. They have improved, and there is less chances for you to have false negatives. But I'm not saying that they're 100% perfect, because nothing is.
So then should I get retested and, you know, have my sister get retested?
I would say yes. I would say let's do a little bit more of research of what type of test you got, and then see what the more recent results that we have related to that type of those type of tests. Are they having a lot of false negatives, or was a mistake during the process? Was the laboratory having some issues? Because anything could happen. We need to find out which one of the variables was the one who caused it, and then I would say go for the tests that are different or more accurate in terms of results that we have had recently, and get tested. I would absolutely go for that. If I were you, I would do that, because I want to know. And if there is any ways that we can prevent this. And from your sister, that I believe that she's negative, right? She does not have developed cancer. So that would be a good way to go for her. So that will be my suggestion to you. If you were my patient and we were talking in my clinic and we were talking about this, I would suggest that we, first of all, find out what are the results of the test that you got to make sure that that's what happened, and find out that that test is not the one that we want to recommend, and then go look for the ones that are more accurate, that are giving better results, that have been proven to be more accurate, and then go for that if possible.
Okay, thank you. That's great advice. So
you're very
welcome. So we know that oftentimes when someone is diagnosed with breast cancer, depending on their treatment, they may have to take chemotherapy. So can you briefly discuss the most common chemotherapy drugs that breast cancer patients may have to take, and then explain the benefits and side effects? Because, you know, a lot of breast cancer survivors, you know, have a lot of questions if, you know, they're newly diagnosed or even still going through treatment. They have a lot of questions that sometimes they feel they may not be getting the right information about the drugs that they are taking.
Well, of course, I will be happy to answer that question, but I want to start with something that I have make it as my goal in life, which is to clarify to people that are listening right now that the specialists with drugs are pharmacists and not physicians. I just want to make a quick clarification here. I compared last month the curricula from Harvard Medical School versus University of Southern California Pharmacy School, and I just wanted to see how many of these people have studied drugs and how much have studied, how deep are their studies. And then I found out that Harvard Medical School teaches their students one semester about every single drug or type of drug that exists, and one semester to see how that drug has to be monitored to verify if it's working or if it needs to be changed. Those are called pharmacology and pharmacotherapy, one semester for each. And I went, when I went to USC, which is University of Southern California, and I checked the pharmacy school with the same comparison with the same classes, I found out that they have 10 pharmacology classes, which is 10 classes that teach, semester classes that teaches them what are drugs and how they work and how we need to use them in the human body, and then 10 classes, 10 semester classes where they study how to monitor them to verify that it's not damaging anything else and that it's actually working. So when somebody like you described has doubts and don't understand what it is, you don't go talk to a nurse. Because nurses don't go to school to do that. You don't ask the doctor because the doctor knows about diagnosis. You go to a pharmacist, and if you can find a board-certified oncology pharmacist that is an expert, absolute expert on this drug, that person is going to give you every single detail in a very, 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 I guarantee that, nerdy way. So you would know way more than you want to know. So if any patients that are out there want to know about drugs, talk to the drug dealer. That's why I call my podcast The Legal Drug Dealer, because that's who we are. If you need to know about drugs, talk to a pharmacist. We went to school for 6 years exclusively to learn about drugs, and that's what we're here for. So utilize your pharmacist and learn from them, because they're the ones that know. So to answer the question, I'm sorry about that, but I am very
No, thank you, because you just made a great point, because when you're going through the situation, you have your oncologist, you don't think, oh, let me talk to the pharmacist, because you're just listening to the oncologist saying, this is what you need to take. Yes, this is what might happen. Boom, boom, boom. And then, you know, go along your merry way. You don't, and no one ever says, I don't really think to say, hey, if you have any questions, go talk to, you know, the pharmacist. They don't really say that. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's because they don't really want you to perhaps know the full extent, you know, of the drugs that you will be taking. So, no, I really just want to thank you for sharing that, because I still had no idea, oh, you know what, let me ask my pharmacist, because they don't really advocate that you do that.
Yes, and that was part of my point. I'm not saying that physicians don't know about drugs, because they do, but they have a general information and opinion about that. To be absolutely clear with you, every physician that works in a big hospital that is not independent, okay, that doesn't have one infusion clinic in their office, but every physician that works in a clinic, in a hospital, or is part of a system, they do not work without a pharmacist. The doctor decides, this is the guideline that we're going to follow, and then all the data, weight, side effects, you know, previous comorbidities, any detail that the patient might have, including laboratory tests, go to the pharmacist first. And 2 days or 1 day before the pharmacist gets the drug, the pharmacist is working diligently to make sure that every single detail that is necessary for that patient with that drug, with every detail, is taken in consideration. And as a pharmacist that did that for more than 7 years, I can tell you, I refused to prepare medications for patients that did not qualify, even though the physician pushed for it. So if you want somebody that is going to protect you from what the doctor doesn't know, because it's not their fault, it's just simply that they don't know. They don't understand it. That's not their area of expertise. It's ours. Their area of expertise is diagnosis and find out what to use for it. That's it. Our job is to protect and to make sure that the drugs that we're using are good for you and your specific body, because everybody's different. So maybe the drug that works for you doesn't work for your twin sister, even though you are identical, is the way that it is. So that's why you need somebody that advocates and works exclusively in your case at the time that you need their help. So again, most people don't understand what is the difference between a pharmacist that works in a regular retail place dispensing medications versus a clinical pharmacist that works in a hospital and is submerged in this type of job, because, well, they haven't touched them. But now it's I take it upon myself to educate the community to understand what it is. And if you want to know about the drug and every single detail, and again, with the risk of being attacked by a big fat nerd, talk to a pharmacist.
You know, that brings up a good point because, you know, I'm a four-year survivor now, and I have a friend that was diagnosed. Thank you. I have a friend that was diagnosed with cancer, but it wasn't breast cancer. But I, you know, went with her on her appointments, and, you know, she was saying that her oncologist kept pushing for her to have chemotherapy, even though she possibly didn't need it, but just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. So there was kind of, you know, a confrontation between her and, you know, the oncologist. And so then at one point, the oncologist told her, you know what, well, I'll just bring in the pharmacist and let you talk to the pharmacist. And I was actually, you know, there with my friend when the pharmacist came in. And totally different approach, you know, wasn't like demanding you need to have this, explained and really broke down the benefits and, you know, of her having chemotherapy and, you know, just explained things in such a way that, you know, we were comfortable with that. So, you know, so it's only the fact that I think she was so opposed to having it that her oncologist said, well, you know what, just, you know, if you want to, you can talk to the pharmacist, because even though I've had cancer, like I still was not thinking, oh, you know, talk to the pharmacist. So the pharmacist did explain things in such a way where she was able to feel comfortable about, you know, the decision she had to make. And, you know, and myself, you know, as a former cancer patient, you know, I was able to talk to the pharmacist and ask about this, you know, this side effects and everything else because I was knowledgeable. So it was actually a great conversation. So, you know, I just really want to thank you for enlightening us to the fact that we can talk to an oncology pharmacist and, you know, not to be afraid, you know, even to ask to speak to the pharmacist. So I just really want to thank you because I had no idea that that was something, you know, to even think about and consider doing.
Well, you make me very proud. And I was having chills as you were talking because that is what we're there for. And that's what we go to school to for 2 extra years to get trained of how to be an oncology pharmacist. And then we have to work for 500 hours before we are eligible to be board certified. And then we have to take a 4 long hours test to be certified. So we study and we prepare ourselves to do the best for our patients. And it's very sad that you guys don't allow us to do it for you. But there is very, very common now practice that a pharmacist is part of the team when you have your oncology treatment. In the clinics that I have worked, you get your diagnosis, you get referred to the oncologist does all the tests and the discussion with you. You guys agree on doing chemotherapy, for example, and then we get the chart. And once that I get it, I study my charts for like 2 or 3 hours each patient, making sure that absolutely everything that is included in that package has everything that I need to know for the drugs that the doctor have decided that the patient needs. I would not tell you which drug you need because that is not my job. My job is to verify that the drugs that the doctor decide that you need to have are okay for you as an individual. If you are not going to reject it, if you're not going to have horrible side effects, if it's not going to affect any other possible diseases that you might have, or if you have any deficiencies, like if you have liver problems, can you use this drug or that drug? And then we can suggest to the physician, but he's the one that makes, or she's the one that makes the decision, not us. Our job is to make sure the patient is safe. And that happens in retail and in clinical pharmacy as well. So now we have clinics like this where the pharmacist is part of it. And my patients are not allowed to start their treatment until pharmacy, any pharmacist that is in that team, goes and counsels them. And once that is done, we get a document signed by the patient that says, I agree to get chemotherapy, and then, and only then, is when I go to my clean room to mix your medication. Not before that, because it's your choice. And my job is to tell you neutrally what it is and how it is, and you will make the decision. And if you tell me you wasted your 4 hours studying me because I don't want to take it, I would smile to you and say, thank you, that's your right, and I'm absolutely happy that you did it. And if you say, let's go for it, I will be happy to tell you, okay, I'm going to go mix it. And while I'm mixing it, waiting for the drug to dissolve, I'm going to be praying for this medication to help you even more. Because that's our job,
that's
and that's
beautiful.
What we do. People don't understand that that happens, but it does.
We're in the
back, but people don't see us, but we're there, and we're taking care of you. So if you want to talk to a pharmacist that is an oncology pharmacy, just look for the oncology board-certified pharmacist in your state or whatever you live in, because podcasts are listened to in the whole world. So find out about oncology pharmacists and talk to one of them and discuss with them. Now, if you go to a retail pharmacy or your grocery store and you talk to that pharmacist, I'm sorry, that person is not going to know. Because that person is not a specialist.
That's usually what you think of. Oh, if you know you're in the store and you know gonna go buy something over the counter, cough medicine, or something. Well, let me ask the pharmacist, and you know that's the extent of it.
But let me just tell you something funny. Yes, I'm gonna tell you something funny. If you ask me for a cough medication, to me that I'm a pharmacist, 26 years of experience, I would tell you, "Oops, I don't know," because that's not what I do.
Right.
You're an expert in the area that you work. Yes.
Right. Now we know.
So, thank you for allowing me to say all this because, as I said,
I'm glad you're letting us know.
Important.
Yes. Thank you for sharing with us because, you know, I know I had no idea and didn't know the full extent, you know, of your position. So I just want to thank you for all of the work that you do for us.
Absolutely. It's our job. That's what we go to school to do for because that's our vocation. And it's a privilege. And it's a very, very scary situation. And, you know, I've cried with a bunch of my patients when I explained stuff to them. And now I'm able to give conferences about how to support your cancer patient, because people think of stuff that they never thought about, and I've seen it myself because I have cried with them in their rooms before they get chemotherapy when I start explaining stuff to them. So we're people too, and we do care, and we do want the best for you no matter what. So please, just please, whenever you have a pharmacist that asks you, do you have any questions or do you want to know something about the medication, say yes and see how it goes. And then whenever you realize that these people are experts and they're going to help you, you're going to be like, gosh, I'm going to ask this person one more time because this person is the one that knows. So you have no idea, Cynthia, how much this means to me. So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity during this episode that is dedicated to something else. So thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you again. So as we were going to briefly discuss, you know, talking about for those that do have to have chemotherapy or that have been through chemotherapy, you know, what are some of the most common drugs that you may have to take and their benefits and side effects?
Well, we do have two types of treatments. The treatment that is an adjuvant of chemotherapy, which is after surgery, which is the kind of therapy that is assigned to take care of anything that might have been left there, in case that something was left after the tumor was removed. And there is other type of therapy that is before the surgery occurs, and it's actually to try to shrink the size of the tumor, and then the possible extensions of that tumor that are not perfectly round, I wish they were like that, but they're not, were closer to the actual tumor. So whenever the surgeon goes there to take it out, it's easier to get it out. So those are the main two type of therapies that we have in general. Now, we have for the ones that are used to shrink, we have drugs like taxanes, as you said to me, Taxotere, Taxol, 5-FU, Cytotax. So we do have so many that if I start geeking out here, you're not going to let me stop talking because I love my drugs. That's what I do, drugs. But what I want patients to understand is that doctors, if they follow the NCNC guidelines, those are the guidelines that are led by clinical studies, and you shouldn't doubt those. Now, if you go to a doctor that is trying to push you to have chemotherapy just to get money from you and you don't see the reason why, well, you have the right to decide if you want it or not, or you can change doctors because, as somebody told me recently, those doctors, you hire them. And if they're not doing the job that you want them to do, well, you get to fire them and find another one. It's that simple. The okay. respect that we have with physician at these days is whatever the doctor says is like a god talking to us. And that is not true because they're people too. And it's very, I would say, it's very unfair for us to give them that much responsibility. So if the doctor is pushing something that you don't feel comfortable with, that you don't want to do, that you don't like, and you keep talking to the doctor and the doctor refuses to listen to you, well, that's not the doctor that you need. Go find somebody else and talk to friends that have had better experiences with the other doctors. But you don't have to do what the doctor said. Now, if you have the situation where the doctor recommends this and you don't really like it, and then you talk to another expert, like a pharmacist, and the pharmacist explains to you, this is the best circumstances for you, this is what we should be doing, then you will make your own decision because you are the patient and you have control of your health. Nobody else, because nobody else cares more about it, means your health, than you. So don't give that responsibility to anybody else. You are the patient, you decide. And then that's what I'm trying to motivate everybody to think. There is a ton of medications. There is a ton of geek information that I can give you. But a patient doesn't necessarily need to understand all those details because, you know, you don't know what they're going to give you. Maybe the type of genes or cancer that you have doesn't work with the same drugs that I'm going to mention. And I don't want people to feel that the physician is not treating them with the appropriate drug. That's not the case. It's too many. Fortunately, there's too many drugs that are for every single case, and we just match them with exactly what needs to happen and with the type of diagnosis that you have and the type of individual that you are, and that's what we match. So mentioning drugs, unless you want to really, really, which I don't think you do, want to listen to me, I don't think it's that usual. Now, that helpful. One thing I want to mention before we finish talking about this point is that there is other ways of treatment. You know, chemotherapy normally have the guidelines normally have the times. Well, you have one infusion every 3 weeks for 6 months, and then if you improve, then we continue doing it. Or every single one has a different strategy. But there is something that is called dose-dense chemotherapy. And what that means is that instead of giving you the medication for 3 weeks, they do it in two or one, but with a way higher dose that they would normally mm-hmm. do during the 3 weeks. So basically what they're doing is being way more aggressive to that tumor to get the results faster or to make sure that it does not progress at the speed of the tumor growing, because some of these tumors are really, really aggressive. They grow really fast. So those are the cases that the physician needs to take into consideration. Now, if you're a fragile patient that has other comorbidities or other diseases, you might not qualify. If you're elderly and you are fragile, you don't qualify. But then it's other patients that are younger, that are strong, or have no other comorbidities or diseases that will not prevent you from having that, and you might benefit from that. So when you have a physician that is telling you, I want to do it in 2 weeks instead of three, like your friend had it, just ask questions. Okay, why is this? Why are we doing it this way? What are you thinking that I will tolerate better? Why don't you talk to me about what I'm going to go through? Because I am the one that is going to be suffering that, not you, doctor. So let's talk about it. And communication is the key. So make sure you understand the goal that the doctor has, what is it that the objective that the doctor has with chemotherapy, and then what is the long-term goal. And then if you go with all that, then it's your time to start researching. If the doctor said you're going to use drug A, B, and C, then you go research those drugs. And if you have your oncology pharmacist, you call them and you say, hey, I need you to help me with drug A, B, and C because that's what they're going to give me. I want to know about those drugs. And that will be the smart way to go, because it doesn't make any sense for me talking to you about every single type of cereal that we have at the grocery store when you just eat one. Right?
Sure. So I have a question. I know that for a lot of cancer patients, people that maybe they have never had cancer are always of the opinion, you know, why are you taking chemotherapy? It does more harm to your body than good. So what do you say to those people? Or if you are you know, recently diagnosed and you are contemplating, even if it is recommended, and you're just afraid that it's going to do more damage than good?
Well, chemotherapy is dangerous, period. You have to see me how I get cover myself and in the conditions that I work for me not to get affected by those drugs. So that I will not argue
ever.
Oh,
geez, now you really make me feel better.
Now, this is what I need to explain to you. You need to put in a balance. What is it that you want and what is it that chemotherapy is going to give you? Does it apply? And as I said, I'm presenting in a summit very soon talking about how to support cancer patients. The very first thing that I recommend that a patient that has cancer or has been diagnosed with cancer do is sit on your own and decide what you want to do, because it is your life, nobody else's. Yes, you have family and you have friends and you have people around you that love you and support you and they want the best for you. But if I am your family member or your loved one and I want the best for you, I will go with whatever you decide. So that is my recommendation. You decide what you want to do. And once the decision is set, you sit the people that are important to you in the same table and you talk about it and you say, I do not care what you think. I don't know what you want to do. This is what I'm very clear that I want to do, and I want to be respected. Now, if you're not that clear and you want to sit with your loved ones and ask questions, hey, this is what is happening. What do you think? And they might give you their input, and then you take that in consideration, sit on your own, and make your decision. But please, and I'm begging this to every single patient or possible patient that are there or family members of patients that are out there, make sure you respect the patient's decision because it is their life. Now, the day that you are the patient, people are going to respect what you say. I know 90% of the people do it out of love. I get it because I've been there looking at hundreds and hundreds of patients with their families there. So I understand that. But you are not helping when you're talking against their decisions, when you're telling them to do opposite of what they have decided to do. They decided
that
to take a risk.
To me.
I don't know if that is your... Exactly. And how
yes,
horrible
I had,
was
I had
it
a friend,
for you, Cynthia?
Yeah. I had a friend of, you know, many, many years. And, you know, when I said, you know, I have cancer and I'm, you know, going through chemotherapy, you know, and I had started my treatments, they gave me, like, a whole lecture and we got into this yeah. big debate and, you know, and... Yeah. We ended up ending our friendship because I said, you know, I made this decision for me, and I, like you mm-hmm. were saying, and I said, you know, you're not going through this, but I said I made my decision based on what is right for me. And, you know, they were saying, oh, well, I've talked to all these other people, and they say, you know, you shouldn't be, you know, taking chemo because, you know, it's killing, you know, all of your cells mm-hmm. and, you know, it's going to do more harm to you than good. And, you know, instead of me saying, you know, the person saying, you know, Cynthia, I respect your decision. I'm here for you, whatever you need. I'd got none of mm-hmm. it. Instead, I got a debate and a lecture. And then, you know, as you're saying, you just have to say, look, this is my decision. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I had to end our friendship because I'm like, where is the support? You know, so
yep.
that's one thing that I think that a lot of people, when they first get diagnosed and during their journey, you know, you don't want to be surrounded by negativity. So sometimes you just might have to cut people off, you know, and just be with mm-hmm. people that, you know, really love and support you. So you made a very, very good point.
And that is very sad to me because you need, it's a really scary situation. So the more people you can have with you, loving you and supporting you and smiling to you and having fun with you when you can, the better. So having a circumstance like this to end a friendship of that many years simply because we have different standpoints, it's like arguing about religion or politics. You just don't do it because we're not going to agree. So let's agree to disagree but still love each other. That is my point.
That's true.
Because we do need their support. And listen, nobody knows better about the drug in your body than your clinical pharmacist that is working with you with chemotherapy, right? And I have had patients that have told me flat out in my face, I do not want to do this, period. And I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you want to say, that's your choice. Let's go on with our lives. Because it's not my life, it's the patient's life. And they get to decide what they want to do. And that is nobody else's decision. The problem is that people think that out of love, these comments are important for you to change your mind. And I'm sorry, but I was raised Catholic. I don't care how much you love me. I'm not going to change my religion because you want me to. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. So let's just not talk about it, right? It is my choice. Are you going to stop loving me because I changed? I don't think so. I think you love the person that I am, not the thoughts or the decisions that I have made. So please respect each other. But I don't think this is going to come up to any patient unless that patient has thought thoroughly about every single consequences and then make a decision. You know what? I don't want this. I want to take all my money and sell everything that I want and go around the world. And if I die in the middle of the ocean, that's fine with me. Who wants to come with me? And then you choose a friend that wants to do this with you and you have fun and that's it. Or maybe you live 40 more years. Who knows? Who knows? Science is really good, but it's not exact science. It's not perfect. We don't know anything 100%. But you have something that is beautiful and you have to listen to that is your gut. And if your gut is telling you don't do it, well, don't. You might have a reason. And it's your life and you get to decide, period.
Period.
But let me just say, if you want to use alternative medications, if you want to travel to crazy countries and eat crazy stuff, that is also your choice, my dear. I would tell you, ask your pharmacist, listen, let's talk about it, which means they told me to do this. Okay, bring it to me, and I will tell you if that will work for you or harm you. I would want to talk about that with you. I would not tell you don't do it. I would just find out what that is and how it could affect your body based on the science that I know. And then you decide. Now, if you want to do both therapies, which I've seen people doing it as well, I want to do my chemotherapy, but I also want to use bone broth, and I want to do all these kind of supplements that these people are recommending to me. Because people are desperate when they get diagnosed with cancer and they want to do anything and everything, right? And that is their choice because it's their life. So I would say don't abandon science unless it's your choice, at least as a consultation. So as I said, if a patient comes to me and said, I went to this country that I'm not going to mention any because I don't have any issues with any country in the whole world, and then say, I went to this country and they do this there, and I want to use it. Please make sure that that's not going to do anything harmful to me. I will be happy to do it, and I will tell you my standpoint, and you get to decide. Because that is my job, as well as a physician. We are there to consult and to give you our standpoint, but you get to decide, not us.
Okay. Because I think of a lot of times the oncologist does not really suggest alternative medicine. So, you know, what do you do if you're thinking, you know, what about this, and this, you know? Do you just, you know, bypass your oncologist and, you know, just talk to the pharmacist and, you know, or, you know, what if there is a conflict, you know, because I'm thinking, I know a lot of people may have the issue where their oncologist is strictly against alternative medicine, period. What do you do?
Find another oncologist.
Okay.
It's that simple. Because it is your choice. You know, I understand that there are doctors, and I'm sorry, I worked with too many of them for these last 26 years, and I'm telling you, I've seen them all. They're super nice, sweet doctors. They're super nasty, mean doctors. They're stubborn doctors. They're flexible doctors. There's every single type of person in medicine. So you find the one that works for you. But I would say if I was a patient, I would like to have my oncologist right there with me and talk about stuff. I don't want to do stuff behind you. I don't want you to be taking stuff that I don't know that I'm taking, and maybe what I'm giving you is going to interact with that thing and harm you. I need to know. I want to know. So if you have a physician that is ignorant, because that is the correct terminology, if you have an oncologist that is ignorant about that specific alternative treatment that you want to have, then you find one that knows about it, because the doctor has no idea, and they, which I don't think is right, but they say, I don't want you to do that. Who are you to tell me if you want me to do it or not? It's not your life. It's not your decision. Now, they have the right to say, you know what? I don't know anything about that. I cannot recommend it. That is fair, and that is responsible. But you shouldn't have anything behind your clinician, because, as I said, unfortunately, drug interactions or stuff that you might take might affect your liver, and if the drugs that you're taking that I'm giving you, not knowing that you're taking this other stuff, okay, also affects the liver, but I'm not thinking that it's going to be that bad because it's just my drug, then you might have a really, really bad consequence about it. So I don't think anything in a secret for this circumstances is good. I think that if you don't have a doctor or pharmacist or the team that is open to hear about this, it's time for you to find another one.
Good point. So now we've talked about chemotherapy. Now let's move on to hormone therapy. So a lot of us, after, you know, chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, we get put on these lovely hormone drugs. That
well, they, I know you don't like them. And listen, don't talk bad about my children, because my drugs are my children, and I love all of them, even with their defects, okay? So let's do this. Okay, I understand that the last thing that you want to do is to take more drugs. I get it, because I don't like drugs to take. I mean, I know how good they are and that they're good for certain circumstances, but if you ask me to take a drug every day for the rest of my life, I'm going to say, no, ma'am, it's not going to happen. I'm going to do whatever I need to do so I don't take it, because I don't like them either. But, and this is a capital letter, bold, really bright red, but there are circumstances.
You have to do what you have to do.
Yes, and this is what I like to explain in the way that I found is the easiest way for me to make myself understood with a patient. So this drug that you're talking about is specifically for patients that have hormonal-related cancer, whatever type of cancer that is, because you have cancers that are dependent of hormones in your ovaries, in your uterus, in your breast, in different places. So it doesn't necessarily apply only for breast cancer. And this drug that you're talking about, the bad guys that you're talking about, are helpful for that. So this is what happened. We know that cancer loves these hormones. It's like the Pac-Man trying to find as many red, yellow dots that are hormones to grow and to make himself stronger. Mm. So what these drugs do is to say, okay, let me just get in your mouth and tell you I am one of those hormones. Don't eat anymore. I'm all what you need. But you're not, because this drug is not a hormone. It looks like it, smells like it, dressed like it, behaves like it, but it's not a hormone. So the Pac-Man cancer that is not that smart in that case yet is like, oh, I got you. I'm going to be growing. And he's like, well, I'm not growing. I'm not getting stronger. What's going on? It doesn't matter, dear. I'm what you're looking for. And that's what these drugs do. They actually occupy, they dress themselves like if they were a hormone, and the cancer tried to eat them. And they're like, no, sorry, it's not working. You're not growing. Oh, too bad you died. Which is excellent. That is what we want to do. Because the chances of recurrences for the 5 years after you finish your treatment are really high. Because if it's one Pac-Man over there trying to go around and trying to grow back, that's a chance that you can get it anywhere else. So what you need to do is to keep these guys neutralized by this medication, and then it doesn't come back. The chances that it doesn't come back are higher. And at this point, with this many years of usage of this drug, we can say that it is effective in 70 to 80% of the cases. So it's a good chance. I would say take it. Now, I do know that these drugs cause other side effects. Guess why? Because I know about drugs, they do. And I'm the drug expert, right? But this is what I would tell you. Let's just make sure that everything is okay while you're taking this drug. The thing that I would not recommend ever from any clinician is that they give you a drug and they don't see you again until a year later. That is irresponsible, and that is not what you need to do. You need to have tests before you start taking this drug. Okay, let's see how your liver is. Let's see how your normal is as it is today, and let's start taking this drug. Let's go back in 3 months. Let's just check how your liver is doing and make sure that it's not damaging you. Because if I protect you from cancer, but I destroy your liver, what am I doing?
Right.
So then my responsibility as a clinical pharmacist is to monitor that your liver is okay and any other side effects or any other areas that this particular drug can affect on you is under control. And then we can try other drugs or we can change the dose or we can make modifications to make sure it works. It's not that if one that fits all. It's not like that. And now the physician that tells me that they give you your drug and they give you 12 refills, which means that you have a year long of treatment and they never check your blood, that person is somebody that I would tell you don't go back and see that person.
Okay.
Because you never know. And then the older you get, the more deficient your organs become. So if you started at 60 taking this drug and then you're 65 in your 50 you're taking this medication and your liver was fine 5 years ago but today it's not because you're older, then it is irresponsible not to monitor. So my key is your decision and monitor the heck out of it. Those are my two biggest recommendations. It is your decision and monitor everything that you can monitor and make sure it's good for you. That's all what you need to do.
Okay. I actually have my my oncologist has me get blood work every 3 months.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
Is that good?
And after it is perfect. After 5 years, you can go every 6 months and then once a year. But the very first 5 years, you need to monitor very, very close. Very, very close. And then listen to your body. Because nobody knows if something is wrong with you better than you.
I have to share a story with you. I was not a candidate for a tamoxifen, so I didn't have to take that. I first started out taking anastrozole and ended up having severe joint pain to the point I couldn't walk, and I didn't even realize that what was causing my pain. I had previous back issues before I had cancer. I have sciatica and a herniated disc. So, you know, so if I was in back pain, you know, I'm thinking, oh, it's my back acting up. Mm-hmm. So I've, you know, was taking it.
You didn't have a pharmacist talking to you, right? Let me just say
Nope.
There you go. I would have told you immediately, but go on.
Yeah, so I had no idea. So I've been taking this for a year, and, you know, my back was just getting worse. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, my back is just, you know, getting worse and worse, you know. And I was going to my chiropractor. And so one weekend I got sick and I had the flu. So I, you know, was home and, you know, I got off of my schedule and didn't take the anastrozole for like 3 days. And then like the one day I got up. And I said, oh, my God, I'm not in pain. And then it dawned on me it was anastrozole. So then, you know, I let my oncologist know, you know, of my little discovery, and then they took me off of it. But, you know, I had no idea. So I hear, you know, a lot of women, I mean, a lot of, you know, breast cancer support groups, you know, they're wondering because no one tells them. They're saying, you know, I've been having bone pain. Is, you know, could this be a side effect? You know, because they don't really come out and tell you this is what, you know, could happen to you. So, you know, I also want to encourage, you know, people that are on these drugs, if you are experiencing anything, you know, even if you think it might be something else, I think you should just say something because you never know. So after the anastrozole, they switched me to exemestane. And I was on that for about a year and a half, and it got to the point where I just had extreme fatigue, and I was just trying to toughen it out. I said, you know, could I take some ginseng? They're like, no, you can't take, you know, take any herbs or anything. And I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm just exhausted. Like, by 2 or 3 o'clock, I'm at work. I was couldn't keep my eyes open. I'd, you know, come home, 6, 7 o'clock, I'd be asleep. And I'm like, you know, something is, you know, I'm still trying to weather the storm, you know, and not realizing it could be this medication. So finally, you know, I'm one of my, you know, 3-month checkups with the oncologist, I just, you know, asking, you know, they ask all these questions, how are you feeling, and this, this, and this, and I said, I'm exhausted, and I don't know what's going on. So then my oncologist says, oh, you know, fatigue, this is a cumulative effect of the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, so there's really probably not a lot we could do. You know, you might want to try, you know, some vitamins, but probably it's probably not going to help you. And I'm just like, oh, great. Because now at this point, I had come to my breaking point, and I just started going into depression. And that's when I said, you know what, I think I have to say something, you know, but still not really thinking it was the medication until he says, oh, yeah, by the way, it's a cumulative effect. So then they switched me from that to now I'm on letrozole, and I've been okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been my interaction with
journey.
The hormone drugs.
And this is what I have to say, Cynthia. I would have known that as soon as you start talking, because that's what is identified in my brain for those drugs. Immediately I would know which drug would cause that, because that's what I do. So my suggestion to any patient that is out there listening to me is, you know your body better than anybody else. Do not doubt yourself. When a doctor tells you that's okay, you need to put up with it, I would say change doctors. Go to a physician or practitioners that listen to you, that understand what your problem is. Because as you mentioned, and it is so common, that because you're not being listened to or you're not being validated based on what you're reporting to the practitioner, whether it's a nurse practitioner, a physician assistant, or actually a doctor, patients go in a mental health issue thinking something is wrong with me because my doctor says that I'm okay, but I cannot continue living my life because I have pain or I have fatigue or I have whatever. So do not doubt yourself and think that the doctor or the practitioner or clinician that is taking care of you is the one that is correct, because this person has a lot of education on that area, but you don't. I agree with that. These people have gone to school for tons of, maybe a decade, to be experts in their area. But who have lived in that body more than anybody in the whole world? Yourself.
Right.
So you know what's going on there. And if they're not listening to you, guess what? It's time to fire this doctor or this practitioner and find another one that listens to you. Do not doubt yourself. They don't know you better than you do. Plus, I'm sorry, you take 15 minutes with a doctor and they're going to find out everything that is wrong with you in 15 minutes? That is a miracle if that happens. So I'm sorry, that's not where you go. That's not the decision that you make, and that is not the way that you should treat your body that is being so nice to you for this many years. You know, you treat your cars better. How long do you wait at the store when you, at the dealer, when you bring your brand new car for them to fix it? 2 hours? You actually go home and come back because they're taking care of your car. And then did you spend 10 minutes at the doctor's office for yourself? Is that fair to yourself? I don't think so.
That makes me think of another story I have. You know, now you have become my therapist now for the
yes, ma'am.
We're talking.
I'm happy
that
to be
one. Reminds me of when I was taking chemo, I got neuropathy. I didn't know what it was, you know, at the time, but you know, I think it was into my third or fourth chemo treatment, and my hands and feet went numb to the point, you know, I couldn't walk, and so now, you know, I'm at my appointment, and I'm telling the doctor, oh, well, really? Well, that's never happened with any other of my patients. And,
oh,
you know, so we'll just have to, we'll wait, you know, for a few weeks, and you come back. And then by that point, I was like debilitating and, you know, still like, oh, well, this has never happened to any of my other patients. And then at that point, because my oncologist is wonderful as far as knowledge, but as far as compassion, that was kind of lacking. Mm-hmm. So I just remember at that time, I just ended up having a complete meltdown and breakdown in the office. And then all of a sudden, it was like a light bulb went on, and then they recognized, okay, you know, this is a problem. Like, you know, we have to get you off. And I think, what did they take me off of? Was it Taxotere? That's what did it. And so I've seen that a lot of cancer survivors, you know, either after the chemo and even during the chemo, they develop neuropathy and no one says anything. They're explaining this is what's going on. They're ignored, you know. And so I've told them, like, look, tell them if you're dealing with this to find out what is causing it and to take you off of it. And then if you don't like, you know, the answer you get a different oncologist, because, you know, I literally had to break down before my oncologist was like, okay, well, we'll just have to take you off of that. That is a side effect of, you know, Taxotere. Mm-hmm. Like, I've told you this like a month ago, you know, so we'll just, you know, see how you are next time. And then it got progressively worse.
Let me just say something here, Cynthia, just to open your minds to something different, and not only yours, but everybody that is listening to us. You know, when you have a newborn at home and you don't sleep well, you are not as effective at work as you were when you didn't have any kids, right? When you have a cold or when you have a problem at home, you're not as focused at work as you would be if you didn't. Well, doctors are people too, and they might have situations like this. They might be going through a divorce and they're not as concentrated or as focused as they should be because they're people. So if you don't get an answer that you're looking for from a physician, if the physician is not actually focused or listening to you, you ask again. And if it doesn't happen, well, it's time for you to do your own research, because that doctor goes back home without a problem. You, on the other hand, you have the side effects and you have your issues. So I am advocating for you to take care of yourself and for you to decide what is the best for you, whether it's a medication or it's a practitioner, because you have that right. I absolutely dislike when insurance companies tell you have to use this or that doctor, nobody else. I'm like, if they're all crappy, what am I going to do? Well, you go find somebody else, because it is your life and you have just one. You just get one chance to live a life. That's it. After it's gone, it's gone. And you're not going to say, well, it was the doctor's. They never told me something. I'm sorry. The fault is yours because you didn't make the doctor listen to you. And I absolutely hate when patients of mine are depressed or have, like, anger issues because they're in so much pain or they're ignored or they're not validated or they're having arguments with themselves in their heads because the doctors are not acknowledging them. I just don't want that to happen to anybody. So, again, nobody have more experience in your body than you. Nobody knows your body better than you. And you need to listen to what you feel and then act upon it. And if somebody says it's nothing, talk to somebody else until you get an answer, because that is what you owe to yourself. Again, if it was your car, you would have taken to another mechanic, wouldn't you?
Yes. So lastly, I wanted to talk to you about what is this legal drug dealer podcast that you have. I just love the name of that.
Well, thank you. And that's who I am. I'm a legal drug dealer because I am licensed in 5 states in the U.S. to deal drugs, to sell legal drugs. I am very legal to do that. That's why my podcast is basically focus on what we have talked half of your podcast is about. I am here to educate you, to open your eyes to stuff that you never heard about. Nobody listens to pharmacists because they think the doctors know them. Even today to you that is not what it is. And also, you know that circumstances have happened to you that have proven my point. So what the legal drug dealer was at the beginning was my way to offer my help to people. And now what it is that I am opening a platform for alternative treatments, which means that is not the traditional, which is go to the doctor, take a pill, get fixed. That doesn't exist. That is not true. That does not happen. What you need to know is find out what's wrong and what could be worse if you're untreated, fix that problem, and then prevent it or avoid it. That's what we are trying to do. That's what every clinician should make. The problem is that there's not that much money there. That's why there's not that many promotions. So that's why it's not that popular, I would say it. So my job at the Legal Drug Dealer podcast is to do that, to educate anybody. If you Google the Legal Drug Dealer podcast, you're going to find me with my curly hair and my glasses, and I'm going to be there telling you the truth without any problems, because I don't have any patients with any commercial brands. I would tell you what I would tell my family, because the way that I see my practice, my clinical practice, is that I will treat every one of my patients like if they were my husband, my mother, my father, my kids, my grandma. I treat each one of my patients like that, because I would do the best for them that I would do for my own family. If we all do that, people should be much, much better. So that's what I offer at the Legal Drug Dealer. And I actually have a summit that I wanted to mention that is actually, the name of it is Taking Control of My Own Health Summit. I have 24 clinicians that are talking to you about what you need to know to take care of yourself, and what that are going to empower you to make, to take those first steps to say, no, doctor, you're wrong. I'm going to go find somebody else. Or you're not listening to me. I need to find somebody that listens to me. Because it's fair. It's what you deserve. And you would have think that doctors are not agreeing with me? Well, I have five physicians that are coming to this summit saying exactly the same. Don't give me the responsibility of your life, because I can't make changes. Only you can. So please listen to your body. Come over if you want to. We're here to help you. And we have a lot of information at thelegaldrugdealer.com and at the takingcontrolofmyownhealth.com as well. So anybody that wants to come over and listen to a nerd talking about drugs and healthcare, here we are for you.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me this evening, Madalena, and telling us all this wonderful information, great advice. And I hope our listeners can take this information and that it will guide them through their journey and help them. And I just want to thank you for letting us see the other side that we probably didn't know anything about as to what oncology pharmacists do, the wealth of knowledge that you have, and that how you can help us too, and that you can be an advocate and an ally for us as well. So I just want to, you know, thank you again. I hope this information has empowered everyone and educated our audience. So until next time, you've been listening to Boob Talk, and God bless.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.